Well, good Tuesday morning to you, and we are continuing our series as we go through 1 Samuel and kind of pick up the slack, you know, kind of pull together those loose threads of material that we didn't really cover. We're in David's wilderness wanderings as David is about to become king, and we now have two more lessons here in 1 Samuel, and then we're going to be done today and tomorrow. And then, so today is Tuesday, tomorrow's Wednesday, so then on Thursday morning, we're going to be in 2 Samuel, and we're gonna continue working through this material. I'm very excited about it. I think it's going to be a good time. We're gonna work through, you know, much of David's kingship, and then we're going to work through the pertinent sections of the king. And we're going to keep on moving through this narrative portion, filling in the gaps of what we haven't totally covered. So as I said, this morning we are in the penultimate chapter of 1 Samuel. We're in 1 Samuel chapter 30, and this is a really interesting story. This is a really interesting piece of material. So I would highly recommend going ahead and pausing your audio and maybe read through this a couple times. And this would be a good chance, if you haven't done this in a while, this is a really good place for you. And I would highly recommend this. If you want your practice as a Bible scholar, as a Bible, you know, student, as a lay student of the Bible, okay, or if you're a pastor and you're listening to this, then take your piece of paper, and I want you to draw a plot chart for this, and I want you to draw your 5 W's. Okay, this is a great opportunity to get practice, because this is a wonderful story, and this is a story that is perfectly conducive to having a good plot chart that's very helpful, and having not only a plot chart, but actually, if you want to do a plot chart and you want to do an emotional or a dramatic tension chart to go along with a plot chart, right? Like the emotion chart. So you've got when the action is rising, is the emotional level rising also? Are we more excited? Are we happy? You know, or are our emotions going in an opposite direction to the action? Is the action rising and our emotions are falling? Or is the action getting exciting and we are getting sad? Or are they moving together? And then do your 5 W's. Now, your who, your what, or your who, your where, your when should be really simple. But your what, it may be a little more complicated, and then of course your why. You know, this is a great opportunity. I really mean this. If you're serious about studying the Bible, I would say go ahead and stop this audio, and get out your piece of paper, draw your plot chart, draw your emotion chart, how the audience is supposed to respond to the action in the story, and also try to answer those 5 questions: the who, the where, the when, the why, the what, and the why, and try to answer those. And then after you get your answers, then we'll go ahead and compare notes. Okay, we'll compare our notes. Okay, so go ahead and pause the audio now, and then we'll get back into it. Okay, so I'm assuming that either you took the time to write out your plot chart, your emotion chart, and answer the 5 W's, or you didn't. Well, I guess there really isn't a third way. I mean, maybe you started to do it, and you're like, this is dumb. Luke's dumb. I mean, he might be handsome, but he's dumb. So if you did that, then we'll just follow through. Okay, so we look at our W's. All right, so who is in this story? Well, we have David and his men and the Amalekites. Okay, and there's specifically one slave of the Amalekites. He's an Egyptian who is in this story. And we have the children of the Amalekite, the children of David, and the wives of David and his men. And those are our who in this story. Now, where is this happening? Well, remember, Ziklag was the town that was given to David by the Philistine ruler Achish. And so Achish gave Ziklag to David, and David and his men are there. They go back to Ziklag, and then, of course, the action happens not only at Ziklag, but the action, travels then as they're moving through the wilderness, and they're fighting the Amalekites. When does this happen? Well, this happens presumably, and I talked about this yesterday. Presumably, this happens from after David was sent away from the Philistines, but before Saul has died on Mount Gilboa. So this is like happening contemporaneously with the war that's happening between the Philistines and Saul. Now, remember, I said yesterday that what happens in the story is, for a long time, the story of 1 Samuel is running in just a straight chronological line. But then when David begins his wilderness wanderings, we kind of flash back and forth between David and the court, what's happening with David and Saul. And sometimes there are even flashbacks. There's time is happening. And so the question is does 31, is 31 a flashback after the events of chapter 30? Or is, are 28 or 29 and 30 flashbacks from the events that we see in chapter chapters 29 and 30 flashbacks from the events in chapter 28. So we don't exactly know the timeline, but what we do see, what we see very clearly, is that we're switching scenes back and forth. And when we see things switching scenes and back and forth, what we should see is that there's a culmination in the Bible. There's a culmination between these two characters. Now, interestingly, 1 and 2 Samuel probably should not be divided into two books. They were originally one book, but they were divided into two. And so what we see is, if you look, this division, this back and forth between David and others continues, if you're scrolling with me, back and forth through into the camps of Saul and of course, you know, Saul's son, Ish-bosheth. And we see that this flashing back and forth kind of continues, and we see that continues into 2 Samuel. So what we have here is not really a culmination. The culmination of the events here don't happen until chapter 5 of 2 Samuel. So all of this is rising action. This is rising action that is continuing through. And we should notice that that David sings a lament for Saul and Jonathan, okay? The mighty have fallen. How the mighty have fallen. And that's a beautiful song in Hebrew, by the way. If you've got time on YouTube, look up people who have sing How the Mighty Have Fallen. But you know, David sings this song for Saul and Jonathan. But then if you look forward, going into the next chapters, into 2 Samuel, of course that happens in 2 Samuel too. But after the death of Abner, son of Ner, David sings a lament for him. And so we see this repetitive action. We see that going into 2 Samuel, we see there are still flashes back and forth. There are scene changes between David's men and the armies of the Saulite dynasty and the people within the Saulite dynasty. And this continues. Now, why am I making a big deal about this? Well, the reason I'm making a big deal about this, and I know we're only in our second question, we're in the when, or our third question, we're in our when question. Why does this matter so much? Well, because of this, okay? So in the Bible, we break books of the Bible into different books. And you're like, okay, Luke, thank you for that really detailed information. But we also break it into chapters. And sometimes breaking it into chapters is really, really useful. I mean, there's a reason why writers break things into chapters. And we don't just write one long, you know, crazy narrative. It's because people who write, they want to break things into smaller, bite-sized parts, and for reference, so that we can talk about single units of the text, okay? But sometimes that's a bad thing, because sometimes that forces us to make an artificial division in the text that really isn't there. The story that begins way back when in 1 Samuel, okay? So what really happens in 1 Samuel is David begins to be sent away in 1 Samuel all the way back in chapter, 19? Is it chapter 19? I'm looking back here in my text. Yeah, so all the way back in chapter 19, okay, David is fleeing from Saul. So we have 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30, 31. Okay, so we've got 13 chapters in 1 Samuel, which is, by the way, is like almost half of the book is David's wilderness wanderings. Almost half of the book. Now maybe word for word, it may be actually half, it may be less. But chapter by chapter, it's almost half the book. And then we get into 2 Samuel, and guess what? The first four chapters continue this narrative. So when we break this up into different books, it's really an artificial division. And I'm saying this, I'm reminding you of this, because if we don't take a scope, if we don't take the whole Bible in scope when we're trying to study it, we'll begin to make artificial divisions that the text doesn't make, and that's going to hinder our ability to understand. It's important for us to understand this pattern of flashing back and forth, because the author of 1 and 2 Samuel, which was originally just the book of Samuel, what he's trying to do is he's trying to show us two modes of being. He's trying to show us two ways of going. He's trying to show us what happens with Saul and the Saulite dynasty, and he's trying to show us what's happening with David in the Davidic dynasty, how one is on the descent and one is on the ascent, how one is declining, one is inclining, you know, how one is being destroyed and one is being built up. And it's important to see that comparison. And when we just stop, when we only read a chapter, When we only read a chapter in isolation from the other chapters, we have a tendency to isolate the context and not understand what the author is doing in the fuller context of the book. It's not simply enough to know that David has to save the lives of his family. It's important to know that David has to save the lives of his family when what? When Saul is going to lose the lives of his family in chapter 31. There's a comparison going on. That's a reason why it's a flashback. That's a reason why we don't simply have a summary of the material of what's going on in Saul. Yes, David is the main character in this portion of 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel. Yes, David is the main character in the Samuel books. But why don't we just summarize the material about the Saulite dynasty? Why? Because we're supposed to see a comparison between the two. We're supposed to see a comparison between what God does with David and what God does with Saul. What God does with David's family and what God does with Saul's family. It's important to recognize these things. So these are the patterns that we have to see in the scriptures. And I'm already going way long into this this Bible study. So we might be going a little bit long, but I trust that you're with me today. Okay, so we have our who, we have our where, we have our when. What happens in the story? Now, of course, this story is not really difficult to break down. If you're doing your plot chart, what you should see is, you should see kind of flat action at the beginning. David and his men are going to Ziklag, and maybe emotionally, you might be falling. It might be falling emotion because they're a little bit sad. It's like, oh man, David's not going to get to fight at Mount Gilboa and join in with the other Israelites. But then we read, now the Amalekites had raided the Negev and Ziklag. Okay, immediately, emotion is falling, action is rising. They attack Ziklag and burn it. Emotion is falling even more steeply, action is rising even more steeply. They took captive the women and all who were in it, the youngest, oldest. They didn't kill anybody. Okay, maybe our emotions are rising a little bit, but maybe they're just flattening out and the action is rising. David and his men come to the city. They found it burned. Their wives, sons, and daughters have been taken captive, and David and his men who are with him, they wept. David's wives were taken captive. David was extremely upset, and some of the men are thinking about stoning David. They're like, you led us away on this fool's errand, and now our wives and our kids are almost dead. But it says, David drew strength on Yahweh his God in verse 6. Okay, so right now we've got emotions are about as low as they can be. They're not quite as low as they can be, but they're really low because the question is, would you rather have your wives and children taken captive into slavery, or would you rather have them dead? And I mean, if you can get them back, probably you want them alive. If you can't get them back, you may think they're better off dead. I mean, this is terrible. This is a really bad situation. This is a really bad circumstance, okay? And so what do we see? We see that the action is really steep. I mean, David is almost being stoned by his own men. I mean, this is as tense as it gets dramatically. So David goes to the priest Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, and he says, bring the ephod. They inquire of the Lord, saying, should we pursue them, and will we overtake them? And God tells them, pursue, because you will overtake them, you will rescue your family. So David goes out with his 600 men, and they left some men there because they were too exhausted. I mean, they had wept till they had no more strength for weeping, and then verse 4 says. The NET Bible says they wept till they could weep no more. I think the NIV says they wept till they had no more strength left for weeping, which I think is a much more beautiful turn of phrase, actually. And so they go, and as they're traveling, so they leave 200 men who just cannot continue. They cannot continue. They're exhausted. They're emotionally exhausted. And they leave them there to continue to guard the supplies. Now they find an Egyptian who's in the field, and they give him food and shelter. They give him they take care of him, and they say, who do you belong to? And he says, I'm an Egyptian. My master's an Amalekite. I got sick and they left me behind. And he talks about the raids that they carried out. And David said, well, can you take us to the raiding party? And he said, well, if you swear to me by God that you will not kill me or hand me over to my master, then I will take you to this raiding party. And so David, of course, agrees, and they go down. They spread out, and the Amalekites are drunk. They're eating and drinking and enjoying themselves because of all the loot they had taken. By the way, it's interesting. Looters. Looters are not really portrayed in a good context here in this chapter. So I don't know why there are so many Christians trying to defend looters and looting. But whatever. So anyways, David strikes them down from twilight until the following evening. So what it means is there was. They attacked them, and it took them an entire day to pursue all of them. None of them escaped, with the exception of 400 men who got away on camels. Okay, so this was a very large raiding party. This was not a small party of raiders. When they say everyone escaped except for 400 young men who got away on camels, this is a large contingent of troops. This is a large number of soldiers. If everyone but the 400, I'm guessing they probably had at least 1,200. I mean, David is attacking a force many times his own size. But remember, David isn't some schmuck chump who doesn't know what he's doing. He is the commander-in-chief of Israel's armies, and his men are battle-hardened. They're not a bunch of, you know, piddly-dink raiders who are just attacking people who are weaker than them. They are hardened warriors. They are tough as nails Hebrew warriors. They are the mighty men. And this is, again, this is an exploit of the mighty men that we really don't talk about, but it is. The fact that they conquered a force significantly stronger than them numerically, I think says a lot about just how fearsome David and his men were. Okay, so, and then it says there was nothing missing, whether small or great, and they got their sons and daughters, they got the plunder, they got everything else they had taken, and they brought everything back, and David took all the flocks and herds and drove them in front of all the animals, and the people were saying, this is David's plunder, and David approaches the 200 men, so that now they come back to the men who were too weak to continue. They've been there guarding the supplies for like a day and a half now, maybe 2 days. And they're guarding the supplies, and they come out to meet David and the people, and they're rejoicing. And David approaches the people, and he asks, you know, how they're doing. But verse 22 says, the evil, by the way, you know, so what's our action doing? Let's remember our plot chart, okay? So our action was rising, rising, rising. They find the Egyptian, and you know, we've got more rising action. And then we get the climax where David finds them and they strike them down. And we've got this falling action now. So beginning of verse 17, we have falling action, but we have rising emotion, right? We have rising emotion. So the emotion and the action are going in opposite directions, which is typical of a climax. Like, we're really happy. David and his men, they've won the victory. Their wives and children are safe. The action is falling. And we think, okay, this is going to be this rising emotion, falling action, typical of a well-resolved story, right? Everybody's happy. The action is plain. We're back to peace and happiness. But verse 22, but all the evil and worthless men among those who had gone with David said, well, since they didn't go with us, we won't give them any of the loot we retrieved. They can take only their wives and children and let them lead them away and be gone. And so they're saying, like, they didn't fight. They don't get any of the loot. They don't get any of the treasure. And David said, no, don't do this, my brothers. Look at what Yahweh has given us. He has protected us and delivered into our hands the raiding party that came against us. Who will listen to you in this matter? I love how David phrases that. David says, who will listen to you? David is saying, like, you're coming out with this attitude, but like no reasonable person is going to listen to you. Everybody recognizes that the men were exhausted and they couldn't continue. They did not go because of cowardice. They protected the gear. They didn't know what was going to happen. And you think they wanted to get their own wives and children any less than you did? You know, come on. David's saying, you're being ridiculous and nobody's going to listen to you. Also, interesting, who's in and among David? Wicked men, evil men, evil, worthless men, the sons of Belial, okay? Interestingly, remember that is this expression that keeps coming up in 1 Samuel, right? In 1 Samuel, we keep getting this expression, the worthless men. The worthless men, these men who are you know, they're the worthless. That, remember, the sons of worthlessness, the daughters of worthlessness. We've had this over and over. You know, Hannah says, you know, don't think I'm a worthless woman. I'm a daughter of Belial. You know, and so these men are Belial. They're Belial, and so it's very interesting that among David and his men there are evil and worthless men. By the way, let me go ahead and pause here and make a small theological statement. David was a good man. He had his flaws. Don't get me wrong. David had his flaws. But there were evil and worthless men among David. There are evil and worthless men and evil and worthless women in the church. There are evil and worthless men and women who are leaders in the church. Just because somebody, you know, says the name Jesus and sings a song doesn't mean that they're not evil and worthless. David had hangers-on who were evil and worthless. Christ has hangers-on who are evil and worthless. Don't be fooled. Just because they have sheep's clothing, don't make them a sheep, eh? All right. So David says, nobody's going to listen to you this. The portion of the men who went into battle will be the same as the portion of the one who remained with the equipment. Let their portions be the same. Now, you might look at that and you say, well, okay, well, that's unfair, right? Like, didn't Jesus have a parable very similar to this, by the way? Didn't, that, you know, like, the workers who only worked an hour in the vineyard, they get the same wages as those who bore the burden of the entire day's heat? And they said, well, this isn't fair. This isn't fair. You're making us equal to them. And Jesus says through the vineyard owner, he says, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for this wage? You agreed with this. Don't I have the right to be generous with my own money, or are you envious because I am generous? There's a very fascinating thing, and we see the same thing here. There are a lot of parallels between Christ and David right here in this story. David says, the men who protected the gear, the reserve troops get the same portion of booty and plunder as the troops who went into battle. Interestingly enough, people who get saved at the end of their lives, they get the same eternal heaven. Maybe not the same, they don't get the same eternal rewards necessarily, but they get the same eternal life with Christ as those who don't. Now, yeah, are there different rewards? Sure there are. Sure there are different rewards. I mean, the Bible's too clear about that, but it's interesting that we have a parallel story here in David. And from that time on, it was a binding ordinance for Israel right up to the present time. And then we see again, so we had rising action, and then David solves it, and we have a little bit of a descent. So we should have, you know, in our story, in our plot chart, we should see kind of an M shape. We should see an M right now because we've got falling action again, and we should probably see something like a W that kind of parallels that M. And we see in verse 26, when David came to Ziklag, he sent some of the plunder to the elders of Judah, who were his friends, saying, here's a gift from you from the looting of the Lord's enemies. And a gift was for and then a bunch of following cities. And so David, very wisely, by the way, this is incredibly wise of David. David is from Judah. He has been anointed the king. The Judeans know this. And what does he do? He tries to make friends. Again, another parable of Jesus, you know, try to use earthly wealth to make friends. That's a good idea. Like, he's giving gifts to those people, and he's saying, you know, this is what God gave me, and I'm going to share this with you. What's he doing? He's demonstrating that David is not selfish and greedy. He's not trying to just become a force unto himself. He's spreading the wealth around. This is incredibly politically shrewd. This is incredibly politically shrewd. He's demonstrating what kind of leader he is to the people of Judah, and this is why David is so quickly accepted as the king, because he does things like this. Now, you can call that buying votes if you want, but I think that there's a difference between buying votes and being a righteous person who wants to share the wealth. And maybe it's a little both with David, I don't know. But, you know, Jesus came and Jesus healed a lot of people and Jesus restored a lot of people and Jesus did a lot of good things for people. So was Jesus trying to buy people's faith? Of course not. That's a ridiculous thing to say. But here's the interesting thing. We have this material, we have this story, and it's really interesting. It's a fascinating story. And like I said, you should see, if you have your plot chart should look like an M. And then intersecting that M should be your emotion chart. And so, again, this story ends on it ends with peace and harmony between David and the other leaders of Judah, and peace among his own troopers, and it ends on an emotional high of having everything back and having excessive wealth and David winning another victory. Okay, so we have the you know, going from left to right, we have an M, and then we have a W. And the M is our plot chart that shows dramatic action, and our W is our emotion chart showing how the audience feels with, you know, what's been going on. Why is this story in here? Now, again, I alluded to this earlier. It's because what we're supposed to see is, we're supposed to see this back and forth between Saul and David is supposed to tell us, it's supposed to tell us that David and Saul are being set against each other. Particularly what we see in chapter 31. It's already been alluded to in chapter 28, when Samuel, or whoever's posing as Samuel, said that Saul's sons were all going to die. Right, David's children and the children of his men were in danger, and God delivered them. Saul and his men will not be delivered. Saul and his sons will not be delivered. So we see this parallel. God delivers David and his children. God does not deliver Saul and his children. Does this mean that all of Saul's children were bad? No. I mean, Jonathan was as good a man as ever lived on this earth, but he died because of his father's sins. I firmly believe that. He died because of his father's sins. And there are, of course, lessons that we could take from that. But specifically looking at David right here, what do we see with David? We see the comparison between him and Saul and how he is better than Saul. He is a better king, and he has God's favor. And we also see that when you have God's favor, God is with you. Even when things look bad, God is with you. And I know that sounds kind of mealy mouth. That sounds like kind of a lazy application. But that's what the text has. The text shows us that when you're God's man, nothing is going to happen that God is not in control of. God was in control of David and his men, and I think that they were being punished. Frankly, I think that this may have been a punishment for going with the Philistines. I think this may have been the price that they had to pay, because they chose to go to Philistine country. They chose to go to Philistine territory. I think that may be the case. I'm not 100% sure. The text doesn't tell us, and you always need to be careful when you make assertions and draw conclusions that the text can't directly support. But I tend to think that's the case, is that this is an act of discipline on the hand of God, but there is a difference between the discipline that comes upon the godly and the discipline that comes upon the ungodly. The discipline that comes upon the godly is the discipline that causes them to repent, and the discipline that comes upon the ungodly is the discipline of destruction. Those are different kinds of discipline. Those are very different kinds of discipline. There's a big difference between being sent to a penitentiary to be reformed and facing the death penalty. And both are appropriate, by the way. I have been a lifelong supporter of the death penalty. I continue to be a supporter of the death penalty because the Bible supports the death penalty. So, anyways, that's a story for another day. But the point is, they obviously are fulfill different parts of justice. Okay, so all that to say, what do we draw from this? We see that whether or not this was the discipline of the Lord, David is God's man, and nothing is going to hinder David from becoming God's king. And I think that of course, has a Christological perspective. Nothing was going to hinder Christ. Nothing was going to hinder Christ from going to the cross. Nothing will hinder Christ from becoming king in the future. Anyways, I go on a little long today. But I hope that this has been a meaningful Bible study to you. I hope you've enjoyed this, and I hope you'll join us again tomorrow as we look at the death of Saul and in chapter 31 and the conclusion of 1 Samuel. Thank you. God bless.